Welcome to Let's Talk Social Work. It's wonderful to have you as part of our community of listeners. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. It's great to have you here. And if you're a frequent listener, thank you so much for supporting what we do. I'm Andy McLenahan, and today I'm excited to explore another new topic as my guests and I discuss coaching in social work. We'll be looking at what coaching is and how engaging in coaching can be an opportunity to receive support and guidance, develop skills and navigate career paths, and a helpful way to engage in self-reflection. As well as looking at what coaching is, we'll look at what it isn't, exploring how it differs from counselling or psychotherapy. We'll also explore who can benefit from coaching and how to get involved. Joining me today are professional coaches Tinu Ashayi, Keith Dyer and Kate Cuthbertson. Tinu, Keith and Kate are all social workers who between them have a wealth of practice experience. Kate also oversees Baswa's Social Work Professional Support Service, which we'll discuss in detail later in the episode. As always, we're conducting our discussion over Zoom, and as sometimes can be the case, this can lead to technical problems. Tinu is currently on holidays, joining us from Nigeria, and unfortunately her internet connection isn't very strong. This means at certain points during the conversation, she drops out and comes back. I'll keep you up to date as we go, just when Tinu is part of the conversation and when she's not. I hope you enjoy the episode, and as always, thank you so much for listening. Welcome to Let's Talk Social Work. Tinu, Keith, Kate, how are you all doing? Tinu first, how are you? Are you well?
Yeah, thank you very much, Andy. I'm very well. Good to see you.
It's lovely to see you. And Tinu, you are currently on holidays and you're joining us from holidays. Whereabouts are you?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm currently in Nigeria. I'm on a break for a couple of weeks. So yes, enjoying lots of sunshine here.
Yes, lots of sunshine. We were chatting about this before we started. Tinu is hot. I am cold. But that's sort of my perennial state of being. Keith, how are you doing? Are you well?
I'm very well, thanks, Andy. Very well.
Good man. And where are you?
I'm based in Edinburgh, at the moment, heart of the city.
Okay. And Kate, welcome. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. I'm great. Thanks, Andy.
Good. Kate, where are you? Sorry, just the full house. Whereabouts are you?
I am on the Hampshire-Dorset border in the beautiful New Forest in the south of England.
Yes. There's something about New Forest and horses, is that correct?
That's true. New Forest ponies.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. There's a band I always think of. They were called The Young Knives. And this is going back, way back to when I was at university, 20 years ago. And they had a song about horses in the New Forest. It's what I always go to when I hear anyone talk about the New Forest. Don't really know why I'm sharing that. Nice. Just bit of get to know you
share.
Context.
It's a good share. Yeah.
Yes. Do you know The Young Knives, Keith?
I don't. But I like the connection that you've made to him.
Yes, nice to personalise this stuff, yes. Anyway, let's start. I want to start at the very beginning. We're talking about coaching today. Can someone tell me what coaching is and who is it for?
Right, okay. So the way I see coaching, Andy, I see coaching as the art of facilitating the performance or development or learning of somebody else. So as a coach, what a coach does is creating that platform to really kind of engage in a thought-provoking kind of conversation with another person to really kind of help them to work on an area that they may choose to work on. And it's really to help them to access their own potential, really, their own resources to maximize their potential, whether on a personal basis or in terms of their career. So coaching is basically a thought-provoking conversation that can really help somebody to gain insight and become aware so that they can really kind of help themselves to move forward.
Thank you, Tinu. I really like that. So art of facilitating performance or development. That's not what I was expecting to hear. Anybody else? Keith, Kate, what would you like to share?
One of my favourite definitions is from Helen Tiffany, who I did my accredited coaching training with. And she calls it a conversation with purpose to promote positive change, which I just think is beautifully succinct in what we're trying to achieve.
You've both talked about conversation. Again, that's interesting. So it's not something which is done to you. It's something that the coach and the coachee, is that the correct terminology we're
Absolutely.
Going to use?
Yeah.
So it's a discussion between a coach and a coachee. Give us that nice succinct definition again, Kate.
So a conversation with purpose to promote positive change.
Wonderful. Keith, anything you'd like to add?
Very difficult to top that. That is a fantastic definition of coaching. And coaching for me is about having very much a conversation about goal setting, but very much about self-awareness and where people want to find. So, and again, it's impossible to go into coaching without that important background and the study that people have made into it. But that idea that it's Michael Bunyan-Stanier, that element of curiosity, not leaping into the solution model, and just staying curious with the person for that bit longer. And really that, for me, is the difference between coaching and advice giving or mentoring, because there's a significant difference.
And to what extent are you helping the coachee to find their own path as opposed to instructing? Is it very much about guiding the individual to work out the solutions to their own problems? Would that be correct?
Yeah, ultimately, that can be the first part. Sometimes with coaching, though, the most obvious answer isn't the main challenge. And part of the task and action of the coach is to really get into open-ended questions of, and what's the real challenge here for you? Because what might be the first answer isn't usually the real problem and challenge.
Okay. Let's kind of hold that thought. We might come back to that then. But before we do, when I think of professional coaching, when I think of executive coaching, I tend to think of primarily the business or finance sectors. How long has coaching been in existence in social work?
I think this is a really interesting question. So the introduction of practice education in social work came in 2012 when I trained as a practice educator, actually. And during that time, that sort of changed thinking around supervision and introduced coaching as a concept within social work. However, social work had been around, coaching in social work had been around before, but it probably moved it more into the mainstream in terms of identifying its benefits for social workers. However, what we've seen happen is while coaching has taken off, if you like, in other sectors, so we'll probably talk more about this, but for example, finance, banking, when we think about coaching, in those sectors, it's very prominent. Also in education and health, coaching is more prominent. In social work, that didn't really happen. So there seems to have been a sort of plateau of introduction to coaching quite a while ago, and then it didn't really seed within the profession. And there's some questions around why that hasn't happened. What we've seen over the last sort of 10 years, I would say, is there has been an increase in understanding in coaching and what it can do for the social work profession. So frontline social work programs are a good example of this, because if you undertake a social work program with frontline, you have coaching as part of that education. But what we're trying to look at the moment as part of the PSS and from a wider perspective is the Professional Support Service, is do we need to further define what coaching is within social work? Because do social workers know what coaching is and how it can benefit? What we know is social workers are very reflective. We know through education that, you know, we are taught to be reflective practitioners. Supervision is part of that. And then how can we differentiate, like you alluded to, supervision, therapeutic conversation and coaching, but also where those connect. So it's been around a long time-ish, but it needs further promotion in order for practitioners to better understand the benefit it can offer.
And there's a lot of subjectivity there, I suppose, because a decade, 12 years, in some ways that is a long time. But if you're trying to deliver cultural change within a profession, that's actually quite a short time as well. You know, it's, you know, you're trying to introduce significant changes here. I want to know how each of you became involved in coaching. Tinu, how can you tell us about your coaching journey?
Right, yeah, it's an interesting one. And my coaching journey, I actually, my very, very first experience of coaching dates back to around 2012. So the local authority that I was working for then brought in coaches for all frontline managers. And going back to what Kate said in terms of understanding of coaching in the social work world, for us as line managers, then it was like, oh, they were bringing people to mentor us and to give us answers to, you know, the challenges that we were facing. And we had several sessions with these coaches, which for me, personally, I found it very, very frustrating because my expectations that I took into the sessions were completely different and not in alignment with what coaches were doing. So I didn't understand coaching at all. But a couple of years ago, I was kind of saying that that was when I really started to really, really understand what coaching meant and the value of coaching. So I did a leadership program, and that program, they offered us coaching on a monthly basis. And that was when I began to understand the value and the importance of coaching. I really kind of became aware, you know, my self-awareness began to grow and I began to understand the importance of coaching. I felt I was actually being helped to really kind of reflect properly and to kind of find solutions to the challenges and the goals that I wanted to achieve. And at the end of that program, I felt everybody really should have a coach and everybody really should be able to kind of understand more about coaching. And that was when I decided to train. So that led me to train. After qualifying, I began giving my time to BASWA on a voluntary basis to kind of support the profession and support social workers really in the profession. So coaching, to go back to your question, for me personally, I found it incredibly valuable. It's really kind of helped me on a personal level, but also on a professional level. And I have also been using coaching skills in my role and in the different roles that I've kind of had since then. So, yeah.
Thanks, Tinu. That's really, really helpful. Keith, can you tell me, you know, briefly about your, when did you become involved in coaching?
Yeah. I became what we call a senior social worker in 2004 and didn't actually have any management training until 2007. The local authority that I am employed with offered coaching and a coaching qualification through Strathclyde University. So I was fortunate enough to be a part of that cohort. I then saw just the parallels between coaching and social work, person-centred counselling and mentoring, all very complementary to each other. So I took that into my management role, as well as a coaching pool that we had within the local authority. So really that's bubbled along maybe is a better way to describe it, in the background until BASWA created the Professional Support Service, and I've been working with them.
Now, listeners, we make this podcast over Zoom, as you're probably aware. Tinu explained at the start she was joining us from her holidays in Nigeria. Unfortunately, her Zoom link has cut out and we're going to have to proceed without Tinu. So it's still me, Kate and Keith. Really sorry that Tinu's not able to be part of the episode. She may be able to join us later. We don't know. So that's just the way it works, unfortunately. Kate, you talked a little bit, we have kind of touched a little bit on the benefits of coaching, but it'd be really helpful maybe to explore that now in a bit more detail. Kind of summing up fairly briefly, what would you see as the main benefits to the coachee who goes and receives coaching?
Yeah, it's a real opportunity to speak to somebody who has no agenda other than supporting you find what you are seeking. And that might sound a wee bit whimsical and potentially a bit woolly, but certainly coaching's not, because it's really about drilling down into what people start with of, oh, I just feel a bit in a rut or lacking in something, actually down through the conversation into breaking that down into, well, the goals that that person actually wants to achieve and what they need to do and find to get where they need to get to.
Just on that, I received some coaching in a previous role I was in, and it was one of those situations where it was a good job, it was just the wrong job that I was in, and I'd been there for quite a long time. feeling quite stressed and really wanted to move, and speaking to this coach, and the conversation really just did come down to, Andy, you need to get a new job. Because I think, you know, what we're getting at was what I wanted to do with my life and sort of the values I held and the sort of work I wanted to do just did not align with the post I was in. And then it was quite pleasant because I had that conversation. And then a couple of months later, I landed my job with Baswa, which I got to tell you, I just absolutely love my job with Baswa. And in my sort of, you know, couple of months of notice period, I bumped into the coach again. He must have come back to the organization I was working for. And they're like, how you doing? And I was like, I'm getting out. I've got a new job. And he was so pleased and it was great. Sorry, a little personal aside there to tell. But yes, I thought when you're talking about what you described as sort of potentially whimsical, find what you're seeking. That totally resonates with me, and how sometimes you just need someone to guide you through that process, open up what possibilities can be. What about Kate, encouraging people, I suppose, to kind of fulfill their potential? Sometimes we can all limit what we feel we're capable of, and it can be helpful to have somebody else actually say, no, you're capable of so much more. Is that part of what you would see the coach's role as?
Absolutely. And coaches deal with the being self, so relationships, values, core identity, core needs, as well as the doing self, so career roles, tasks, skills. And coaching is about self-empowerment through self-awareness, self-management and increased self-efficacy. You know, it's a collaborative process between the coach and coachee, and explicitly draws on innate strengths and resources that individual already has. What I have found working with social workers specifically, because there is a difference coaching social workers to coaching non-social workers. That might be something we want to talk about slightly later on. And what I found is that social workers are innately reflective practitioners and also often have highly emotional intelligent skills. And what that means is they are very proactive in the roles that they're doing, and they continue and continue and continue, but often they lack the ability to stop and look after their own well-being. And what coaching does is it enables that conversation. So it is collaborative in process, and because it draws on somebody's innate strengths and resources, you're able to facilitate change, which is often quite transformational, like the example you gave of moving into a new role for that individual.
At this point, Tinu was able to rejoin the conversation. Tinu, one of the things I'm really keen to know about is who can benefit from coaching. You know, does coaching tend to be more useful for social workers who are dealing with the stress of a managerial role? You explained that's when you began. That was your first experience of coaching when you were in a line management role. Is that where coaching will be most benefit, or is it equally useful for staff who have a greater degree of direct contact with people who use services, people who would be in what we would consider more, I don't like the term frontline roles. Frontline always sounds like you're in a war, but you know what I mean? Client-facing roles, service user-facing roles.
Right. Great question. Thank you for that, Andy. I think everybody can benefit from coaching, whether you are in a management position or you're in a front-facing position. Absolutely, everybody can benefit from coaching. Managers, I have been in scenarios where people in management kind of found coaching very, very useful, but also those who are in frontline working with people directly, because social work is people work. We work with people all the time, and coaching conversations can be very, very supportive for anybody, irrespective of the part of the work that they are doing. So whether you're working directly with clients or whether you're in management, coaching can be beneficial for everyone.
Tinu, thank you so much. And I really like that social work is people work. That's great. It's probably a phrase that others have heard. That is, I mean, it resonates with me, but in terms of that articulation, that's the first I've heard that term used. Social work is people work. Keith and Kate, I'm really keen to know, and I mentioned this in the introduction, coaching compared to counselling or therapy. How does coaching compare to therapy? Is it a fair comparison to make? I think it's just one of those issues that people may have preconceptions about what coaching covers.
I think when people first think about coaching, there is a separation in their mind between coaching and therapy and supervision. And actually, there is a collaboration between all of those areas. Coaching is about change and action. And the core purpose of coaching really is to increase self-awareness, to make choices explicit, and to close the gap between potential and how things are currently for the individual. While counselling is, or a therapeutic conversation is about reparative conversation, coaching has a more developmental focus. So we look at the there and then, and how that may be impacting on the here and now, but we're not primarily focused on understanding the past or overcoming traumatic events. However, saying that, the psychotherapeutic conversation can come into the coaching conversation, and actually often does within the social work remit because of that reflective understanding. John Burnham developed a wonderful model called the Social Graces, which I talk a lot about, and when we think about the social graces, we think about our own bias and assumptions. And actually, we can use that within the coaching conversation to think about not only an individual's assumptions and bias, which they may hold, but also events from their past, which have influenced their thinking in the present, but actually can also hold them back in terms of what they want in the future.
And just exploring that a bit more, Keith, what should a coach do if they believe a coachee would benefit from participating in therapy? What if someone comes to you and says, I want coaching, but it becomes clear that the issues that they are bringing to you require a therapeutic approach?
Well, again, you're looking for transparency and honesty from whoever's providing you with coaching, and that is certainly part of the conversation. That signposting, because again, the coach doesn't have a superhuman cape and is aware, very much aware of what they can and can't offer. So it would be imperative to any coach to be really clear about not pausing or stopping the conversation, but just highlighting that actually we're now into an area of conversation and territory that actually isn't that person's skill set, and how best that person can then go on to access the right support for them.
And is there a risk that a coachee might seek solutions to issues via coaching, which in fact do actually have deeper psychological roots and require counselling or psychotherapy to address? You know, if that need goes unrecognised by the coach, that could be problematic. How do you guard against that sort of situation arising?
Yeah, I think it's very important that in a coaching conversation that we're very clear from the beginning to let the coachee know that coaching really isn't about therapeutic intervention. It isn't even about providing advice. But sometimes, because of the value that people get in coaching, they may find the conversation as therapeutic, but it is not necessarily a therapeutic intervention. And when you're coming across issues that you believe would be better provided and supported by another form of intervention like counseling or therapy, then we need to be open with the coachee to let them know that it would be better that they take that to that area, that specialist, because like it said earlier, this skill set that we're using in coaching, although there are some similarities in terms of actually giving people the space, you know, to reflect, you know, listening to them and all of that, but it isn't therapy. So I would refer them on.
Regrettably, listeners, Tinu's Zoom link has dropped out again. She may be able to come back and join us. It's me, Keith and Kate, which is still hugely helpful, and I want to hear from Keith and Kate some more. So Keith, you, as I understand, you have been a coachee, you've received coaching. Can you tell me how receiving coaching has, well, I'm going to presume it's made you a better coach? Would that be a fair assumption to make?
Yeah, I think that is a fair assumption to make. It was a while back, but ultimately I had 3 sessions with a coach that was connected to my role here for this local authority. And I suppose one of the main things is that it was really just so refreshing to have that opportunity to be heard. And as this, hopefully this conversation has indicated, to get into subject matter that either I didn't really want to go into or I wasn't aware that I didn't want to get into. And really just the how easily tapped into the coach through the right levels of questions, innocent enough, nothing with an agenda, but allowed me the space and the headspace to actually open up and really get something from it. And that was just a really validating moment for me as a coach to see, yeah, this is why it works.
Can I just clarify? So are you saying that the coaching, the experience of being a coachee led you to open up in areas that you hadn't expected to, didn't want to, but ultimately benefited from doing? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, yes.
Is there a risk that somebody could then open up in a way that they kind of regret having done? Felt vulnerable having done that, you know, is that something that could happen, that somebody takes part in coaching and then feels, oh, I wish I hadn't shared that?
In terms of it might be uncomfortable. Hopefully, yeah, they're not going to regret having that level of self-awareness. It's not as though anything's being planted into people's heads, and certainly wasn't planted into my head. I already had these concerns or anxieties. And ultimately they were tapped through that conversation in ways that it's easy to get your mind into a position where you're not thinking every day about certain aspects, but actually coaching and the space that coaching allows can bring those subjects up. So I don't think regretting, but ultimately nobody's going to be of the view that all coaching conversations are going to be comfortable. Part of this is challenging yourself.
Yes, and my experience of receiving coaching has been a little like that. You know, ultimately very rewarding, but not always comfortable. And I suppose if you're going to stretch and grow, that sometimes requires that self-reflection that isn't always the easiest to do. So what I want to know now, though, is if somebody's thinking about receiving coaching, we've talked a lot about the concepts, we've talked a lot about how people can benefit, but sometimes I think people might be put off engaging in any new experience because they just don't actually know what the process is going to be like. And I want to explore that so that people can know what to expect if they engage with coaching. So Kate, you are responsible for running BASWA's Social Work Professional Support Service, which offers coaching. We can talk about who it's available to in a wee second, but it offers sessions of coaching. What can someone expect if they engage in the Social Work Professional Support Service? We might refer to that as SWPSS going forward. Tell us a bit about that.
So coachees will register an account within the SWPSS, and then once they are on the website, they get to see our wonderful coaches who have all developed a biography on the website. So the beauty of that and the uniqueness of the service is that this is a peer-led service. All of our coaches are trained coaches and qualified social workers, which isn't the same as other services within the UK. And within the biographies that the coaches add to the website, the coachees can see history and areas of specific understanding and interest, whether they have worked within children's or adult services, whether they have had experience within managerial roles. And that offers the coachee the opportunity to have a look at the breadth of knowledge that we have within the service, but also identify somebody that they align with from a proactive point of view. The coachee can access up to 6 sessions with a coach, and that could be the same coach or they may choose to use a different coach. And then we ask that somebody has a gap of 3 months before reaccessing the service. Within that first session that somebody has, a coachee and a coach would hope to contract in that session. So being open and transparent about what coaching is and what coaching is not in regards to coaching versus supervision versus advice and guidance versus therapeutic conversation. So that conversation happens at the beginning of the relationship between the coach and coachee. And also within that first session, the coach may look at the goals and aspirations that a coachee has what they're going through at the moment and what they see as the benefit of having coaching at this particular time.
Kit, you've talked about the sessions. Now, the sessions are delivered online, isn't that correct?
That's correct.
So you could be speaking to a coach, I suppose, anywhere in the UK, and the benefits being you can then identify someone who whose experience aligns with your experience or where you'd like to get to.
Absolutely.
I'm interested in you use that term align with. I mean, Keith, how important is it that the coachee and the coach click, for want of a better term? I did air quotes there.
I think rapport is important. The reality is, though, for a lot of people, this is a fantastic and quite a unique opportunity to reach into people who don't have an agenda. So actually, it probably is, although important, it's less of a priority than actually being heard, listened to, and have some of that conversation and dialogue with people who really just want to see you get to where you want to get to.
Okay. And I'm going to have taken a note here. Use the word rapport, Andy, rather than click. You don't need to use air quotes when you use the word rapport. Wonderfully, Tinu is back with us. So good to have you back, Tinu. Thank you. Thank you for persevering as well with all this complications with our technology. I wanted to just to help further examine the process of coaching and help to illuminate what someone might expect if they come for coaching. I have a scenario that I want to put to you three, and you can tell me what you would do or how you would approach this situation. So a social worker becomes a manager. On becoming a manager, they find it hard to delegate because before they were very accustomed to delivering all aspects of their previous role by themselves. And as a result, they're very hesitant to cede control to the social workers they're managing. They also find it really difficult to give negative feedback to the staff that they're managing. If someone came to you with this situation, what would you be saying to them? How would you approach that as a scenario?
In that scenario, Andy, what I think is always important is to understand the realities and what evidence the person actually has to support that they're not effective at delegating and that they're also avoiding giving negative feedback. So it's really important that we don't just take at face value that that's the reality for everyone. So it's really about asking open-ended questions about what would make you think that. What gives that indication?
Thank you. Tinu, Kit, have you anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I think what I might also do is to help the person to see the benefits, the advantages of if they delegate, how might they then use the remaining time that they have, you know, to actually serve them better. And that may kind of help them to feel a little bit more comfortable with starting to delegate little by little before they can become comfortable with that, yes.
Wonderful. Kit, any thoughts?
I think this is where potentially you can get an element of therapeutic conversation because you're exploring somebody's potential past around their own experiences and confidence issues around why they may not feel confident in delegation. And that often opens up questions around where people's confidence comes from and our self-narrative around how we have been spoken to potentially from caregivers or the education system and then how we then lead and manage people. What we know is that social workers often go into management roles, like Keith alluded to, having had no management training. And so going into that role is totally different to front-facing social work roles. And often people do face confidence and potential imposter syndrome when moving into those roles, which coaching can then explore.
Thank you so much, Kate, Keith, Tinu. That's really helpful. And just for listeners to know, Tinu unfortunately has dropped off the Zoom call again. So it's again just me, Keith, and Kate. Keith and Kate, I'm keen to know, and this was touched on a little earlier in the conversation, but how important is it that a social worker is coached by a social worker? You know, I imagine a lot of the skills are transferable to other areas. So kind of second part of that question, can a social worker be effectively coached by a non-social worker? Or is it very beneficial to have as with the social work professional support service, a social worker coaching a social worker?
I think context and circumstances for anybody is key. And although I would never say it can never happen, it's certainly really beneficial to be coached by somebody who actually understands the training, the background, the values, and particularly the working environments of social workers at the moment in the UK. And ultimately, you can't make assumptions in coaching, so certain things need teased out and tested out. But the general foundation is there that you understand the people work that's involved in social work, and therefore there's a part of that that's taken forward and understood. And I think that that assists people who are receiving coaching really get into it and get up to speed quite quickly, that they would have with a non-social work trained coach. It just would take them longer.
Thanks, Keith. Kate, you're nodding.
The feedback that we've had recently on a recent focus group in regard to the SWPSS was that the coaches being social workers was of significant value because of the significant understanding and complexities of social work. We do have to be aware of potential conscious and unconscious transference in regards to social workers potentially knowing or understanding too much, and potential unconscious collusion from a professional perspective.
Now, just explore that a bit. Conscious or unconscious transference or unconscious collusion? You've lost me.
So transference is where the understanding of a coach or a coachee, because of professional background, could hinder their own thinking around a particular topic or could create bias or assumption around themselves. And in regards to unconscious collusion, we may be talking with a coachee about a situation that we have also experienced, so potentially a bad management experience. And does that then alter the types of questions as a coach we may ask because of our own personal experience?
Kate, Keith, thank you so much. We're going to wrap very shortly, but I want to ask before we do, we've talked about the Social Work Professional Support Service. That's a BASA-run service, Kate. Who is it available to?
So the Social Work Professional Support Service is open to all social workers at all levels, so student all the way up to director level, and including qualified and newly qualified practitioners. Within Northern Ireland, Wales and Scotland, the service is open to all social workers. And within England, the service is open to BASWA members.
And I believe that's because of how the service is funded. It's funded by the devolved governments in Northern Ireland, Scotland and Wales, so it's open to all social workers. If you're based in England and you're not a BASWA member, of course, that's another good reason to become a BASWA member, because you can then make use of the Social Work Professional Support Service.
Absolutely. Just one last thing before we finish, Andy. I just wanted to talk about the coaches within the professional support service. So we have coaches around the UK, within Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland and England. And all of those coaches are trained coaches and qualified social workers and access regular one-to-one supervision and continuing professional development opportunities as part of that to ensure their own learning and development.
Okay, so anyone who's going to receive coaching through BASWA's Social Work Professional Support Service is being coached by, can we say, the best in the business? Would that be fair enough, Kate?
I mean, we would say that, Keith, wouldn't we?
Yeah, well, Keith would. Keith is smiling. And Tinu, I'm sure Tinu would say the same if she was with us now. Listen, I've really enjoyed speaking with you two, Keith and Kate. It was wonderful having Tini on the podcast as well. This has been, because of the technical issues, has been a bit more of a struggle than normal, but it's been a really wonderful chat. Thank you so much, Keith and Kate, and to Tini in absentia. Thank you so much for absentia, be the word, yes. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you very much.